Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World, episode 165. I'm your host, John Jordan. Don't forget to check out my daily email about blockchain gaming. You can find that at gamestx.substack.com. In today's episode, I'm talking to Sébastien Bourget and Nicolas Sabastini from The Sandbox. So The Sandbox has been around since as long as blockchain gaming, really. Maybe I'm a little bit impatient, but I want to know what's going on with The Sandbox when it's sort of coming out. I push a little bit about what's going on with The Sandbox. Is it taking too long? I'm also interested in some of the data. So they recently announced they had 1,000 experiences created, UGC content. My feeling was, is that a lot or is that not a lot? I wasn't quite sure. So a little bit teasing in this episode. I try and push them a little bit to find out what's going on with The Sandbox and what we should be expecting. I hope you enjoy the show. Don't forget, every week I'm putting out new episodes. So there's a lot going on in blockchain gaming at the moment. Don't miss out. Do subscribe. And I'll see you next time. Hello, everyone. And welcome to the show. Very pleased today. I have Sébastien and Nicolas from The Sandbox. How's it going, guys?
All great. Starting the week here in Paris.
Yes.
Exciting.
So I've had Sébastien on the show before. Sébastien's pretty well known. So I thought I might start off the podcast today, finding out a bit more about Nicolas, who's actually the Chief Content Officer at The Sandbox. You've been there for, I think, just over 6 months now, is that right? I think so, something like that.
Actually, it's almost been a year now.
It's almost been a year? Gracious me. Okay, no. So I'm miles off. But I think it's still interesting to find out a bit more about yourself, because you've had, you know, quite an interesting career on the sort of in the gaming, traditional sort of gaming space, as we might call it. So if you can tell us a bit about sort of what you've been up to and sort of why you ended up coming into Web3 with The Sandbox.
Yeah, so I started my career in games in maybe 2004 at Square Enix London as a QA tester. I worked on Dragon Guard and Final Fantasy X-2, I believe, and a few other games back in the day. And then I left, sadly, gaming, just did entrepreneurial stuff, startup, and came back to it when I moved to the States in 2010. I was the first product manager for mobile at Ubisoft, stayed there for a few years, launched a few games like Rayman Jungle Run with a great team, and I was lucky enough to move to the Apple App Store. There, I spent a few years, first, 8 years actually, first as the head of what was called back then Games Business Management, which was essentially the games team that was working with developers, and then as head of content on Apple Arcade, you know, from the very, very, very early days of Apple Arcade. After that, I joined PlayStation as a VP and head of mobile to build the mobile business for them. There were acquisitions like Savage, there were partnerships that are not nothing is disclosed yet, but it was two amazing years. In all that, I met Arthur and Sébastien. They were probably the first meeting I've had at Apple, something. The first meeting I've had alone at Apple, for sure, which was very tense for me.
And I didn't know that.
Nice. We became friends. I became a big fan of The Sandbox on mobile over the year, which I evangelized for and supported internally. And I saw their career track and impressive for a first in mobile and then even more on Web3. And it was always very interesting because everybody would hit them up when The Sandbox had that explosive success where I tried to, you know, I'm happy to see my friends succeed. I'm not going to go ask them for something. But they were actually the ones who reached out at some point telling me that they wanted someone to focus on creators, wanted someone to help them develop more the America, North American market and partnerships. And it just seemed like an opportunity too good to be true, which led me to leave a job that I loved, but, you know, for good. And I've been really happy ever since. It's been a great year. Lots of learning.
Cool. And obviously, it sounds like because you knew Arthur and Sébastien, you know, had that sort of strong bond, that the Web3 thing was sort of somewhat secondary, but obviously it didn't sort of put you off. But yeah, I guess it sounds like you weren't particularly into sort of blockchain or crypto ahead of that?
I was. I got into blockchain in 2017. I hired a guy in my team at Apple. His name is Steve Cho. He is a very successful VC in the blockchain space. And he is the one who kind of told me, you got to get on this, and started teaching me everything. And, you know, I can't say I was ever a sophisticated investor, but since then I really looked into it. I invested a little bit. I learned about it. And obviously when the craze started, every company was looking into that, right? So the 2020 to 2022, I really looked into it. For me, with the sandbox in particular, I feel the particular wave of games was more about the creator economy and UGC. But yet I think the fact that we are on the blockchain and we are Web3 and we have Sandland and NFT and all that make us so much more competitive and so much more appealing. And I probably would not have joined another UGC company, but I joined the sandbox also because of that.
Yeah, cool. That makes sense. And as you say, your job title is Chief Content Officer. So can you just sort of quickly unpick what a chief content officer does?
At the highest level, two sides, right? Yeah. The first is making sure that players, users have a great experience when they get on the sandbox. They find that the best possible experience, they enjoy, they want to stay, they want to interact, that they have the features that they like. So it's very much about ensuring the experiences are great. On the creator side is that creators choose to work and to develop for the sandbox versus anything else. It's a great home. It empowers you. The no code makes it easy, but is also sophisticated enough that you can create complex things, and you get serious reward as a creator, both in glory and financially.
Cool. Okay, Sebastian, let's sort of move on to you. I guess in terms of sort of news, sort of recent news about the sandbox, the most recent thing is you announced 1,000 experiences created by using the Game Maker tool, which is a separate tool that you use to make experiences in there. It may just me being a slightly cynical journalist. I couldn't work out if that was a big number or a small number. obviously, you press released it, so I guess you thought it was something worth talking about. But can you talk a little bit about? Because you've had some quite big numbers in terms of downloads of the Game Maker, but I guess there's a sort of a like I have done. I've downloaded the Game Maker and messed around with it and created sort of something. But then for someone to make something that they actually want to publish as an experience, that's quite a different sort of process. So how have you found that? It seems like lots of people have downloaded the Game Maker, but then you have to actually be good at doing something to actually bother to make an experience.
All right. So a few things. First, I wanted to rebound a little bit on what Nicolas was saying. And I think that definitely it's really always great to build up a relationship over the years to see how people are evolving. And Nicolas has done an amazing job as well. He's not so expensive about himself, but all the years I've been doing that mobile game studio before, he was really the face for a lot of the game editors and developers for Apple and the App Store. And after he launched this Apple Arcade program, which also has been really successful in supporting and bringing a lot of studios. So for us, he's been, and he's been a great connector of the traditional game industry, mobile, and we felt he was the right person to help bridge toward that world of game studios to our Web3 in general, and for them to realize the potential of what our platform has to offer, what blockchain technology has to offer in general. So that's something that he's been working with us now for almost a year, and we are one of the early results of that work is this milestone that we've just achieved of 1,000 experiences live on the sandbox map made by individuals and small creator studios. And we reached that number in such a short amount of time since we announced the opening of the publishing last October 2023 at our first Global Creator Day that we held together in Hong Kong. because we also have had a few initiatives behind to support and drive content creation. The first series of initiatives has been this Builder Challenge, ongoing for 10 weeks, a program that has been rewarding, that is actually still ongoing and rewarding any creator who is actually publishing an experience on the map. And the amount of reward they receive is proportional. So there's a prize pool of 1.5 million sand now. It's being distributed every week to the creators based on the traffic they bring to the platform. So that's one of the great incentives in Web3. The fact that you contribute to grow a platform, you also benefit from it as a creator. The second initiative that has helped to accelerate this is launching Game Jams. So Game Jams, if you're not familiar, is like a time-limited competition where anyone can enter to create games based on a certain thematic or topic. We've held already 5 Game Jams in just 3 months this year. Our goal is to run probably 30 to 40 this year alone. Mm-hmm. And in those Game Jams, we often collaborate with major brands of IPs, recently Hell's Kitchen with Gordon Ramsay, Care Bears, we've done Avenged Sevenfold, we've done The Walking Dead, among other big IPs, for brands opening themselves to co-creation with like the young, talented creators we have in Sandbox. And it gives two benefits. One, it attracts a lot of fans and new creators to try out the game maker, see by themselves learning the different skills and iterating and progressing. All the participants, they receive a land for free. And the one who complete the game and go further and publish, they also earn a portion of revenue in the form of sand, and they improve their skill and go on into that journey. So we call it build to earn, actually.
Okay.
And the second is there's a great benefit from those brands who are getting a lot of content made by those creators for free, and the best one get featured on their lands directly. So saves them time and money to produce content, collaborating and opening themselves. And for a brand to open to UGC, it's something rather new. Generally in the space, you don't see that quite often. So that makes also something quite unique for Sandbox. We just passed the 330,000 unique creators that used the Sandbox Game Maker over the past 12 months. It's not just the number of downloads, it's really the number of unique users. Downloads, I have to check, because we release updates every quarter,
exactly,
adding major features, etc. But I think it's a big metric in a sense that you probably heard me quite often say the future of gaming is about user-generated content. And when you reach out to hundreds of thousands of people to discover and make games, I feel like it starts to matter. Like it's not a small number anymore. Mm-hmm. And 1,000 games in Web3, but it's a big number. You've been long enough in the industry to know as well that, the number of games in the blockchain ecosystem, I think like a few years back, you were saying there were less than 1,000. So that represents something in the beginning, as we're still early on in this journey. But else, what can I say? Some of the creators, they are starting to earn a revenue as well. So from the time they spend, from the Builder Challenge, from selling their NFT on the marketplace that has opened, and some various initiatives, they are making 4 to 5 figures in Sand Token. Hopefully this year we'll have the first creator that earned a 6-figure number in Sand Token. So that represents $65,000 to above, hopefully. And definitely we are looking at how we are going to drive the success story, the first success story, and many success stories afterwards for creators who earn and make a living in the metaverse and on Sandbox.
Okay, cool. That's good context. I mean, I think with all these UGC platforms, the problem is the sort of the starting out problem, isn't it? Where you sort of have slightly that sort of two-sided market where people are only going to make content for a platform that has users, and users are only going to go to a platform that has content. And so you sort of have to get both things going at once. So there is that sort of cold start problem that
there's always this chicken and egg problem, right? Where do you start? I think like the big difference with an Apple, where like we don't have device that ship every year and that brings new 1 million of entrants. Mm. Web3 doesn't have an Apple yet, a driving force that drive million of users.
Yeah.
But I will get back to it afterwards. It has very interesting alternative. At Sandbox, we focus on creator first. So our choice and a lot of like UGC platform like YouTube, Twitch, etc. They always started by You need to bring the creators. Usually the creator will also be your first players, and among those creators, one of them, many of them, will emerge as a new like successful companies of the platform. And they will not be the existing companies that are building on other platform that will be like these leaders. That will be the one that start early on such platform. We've seen that on all social media. We've seen that on the App Store and so on. So it's kind of a proven formula. But it always starts slow, so every small step, whether you get your first 10 players, your first 100 players, 1,000 players, 10,000, 100 million, it's always a celebration to go through. The second thing in Web3, I think the dynamics are a bit different than in traditionally in Web2, which is a very basically we're all competing for the attention of user and the wallet, the money of users, and whatever time or money they do spend in other games, usually it doesn't translate into growing an ecosystem, growing an industry. Like there is no network effect because we're all competing for the same value. In Web3, actually, when a game or a platform or an ecosystem becomes successful, because users hold their value and their content and digital asset on their wallet and can use that wallet to connect across different applications, it only takes one game to become successful to benefit all the others. We've seen that before with Axie Infinity. We've seen that with CryptoKitties. So as soon as there will be a new hit game, and hopefully Sandbox can be a part of like helping on that, it will help to grow, attract new users by interoperability, by using wallets as a way to connect. So it's something we should embrace. That's kind of supporting a whole ecosystem. That's why we run the Blockchain Game Alliance. And that's why also maybe Nicolas can share a lot of the initiative around education, boot camps, and so on to drive forward the industry towards success.
Cool. And I guess the one thing for the sandbox that again I sort of like to dig into a little bit on the even on the creator side is you're starting to now build, I guess, as you say, these sort of maybe a new generation of creators who maybe haven't been involved in other things before, sort of professionally, and now they have a way where anyone can create cool stuff in their bedroom and then start earning sand token in a more holistic way than you can do with something, say something like Roblox. But on the other side, you do have a very strong sort of relationship with a whole bunch of sort of IP holders, some of which you've mentioned there, Walking Dead and Ramsey and all these sort of people. So maybe Nicola, if you can talk about that. I mean, do you think those sort of the sort of the UGC creators and the IP holders, are they can you handle them the same way? Are they sort of doing slightly different things? Is there a synergy between them? You've mentioned a little bit about the cooperative sort of game jam stuff, but it seems to me when I think about the sandbox, maybe in my head I'm not always quite sure. I mean, obviously you have the you're going to have the brands and the sort of people just making their own stuff, but do those two things diverge or do they become sort of synergetic over time?
They want different things. That's why they have synergies, right? Like I think an IP holder wants exposure to the metaverse, exposure to Web3, interacting with a cutting edge audience that is probably more advanced as far as their interest, and also a connection to their existing audience into something very cool that maybe an ad or a video or an interview will not give them. The creator wants to make amazing experiences, games or not. And when you, every creator, every studio to interact with Gordon Ramsay or The Walking Dead, it's going to be really hard for them normally, right? So for us to give them a turnkey solution free, where on top of it, they get rewarded. And they can create experiences based on IPs that maybe they love or they respect or that can put them on the map. I think it's very unique. I don't think many other, if not no other company does that today.
I guess, but I guess obviously there also is a, then obviously like a quite strong curation process because the IP holders are clearly very protective about what people want them to do. So you sort of
Yes.
have I guess there is maybe a tension there. Maybe tension is the wrong word, but obviously in stuff like Roblox, people are just they're not using IP and they're creating loads of crazy stuff, and most of it's awful, but some of it sort of just blossoms. Whereas do you think you can sort of leverage that sort of creativity with the IP holders who obviously are going to probably have to feel a bit more comfortable in the stuff that's created with their IP, maybe, than they have done in the past, where they've sort of been totally in control of that process?
Well, I think one of the reasons why we're able to sign so many amazing IPs that because Arthur and Seb have put a lot of care in selecting people and building a process that builds a lot of trust with the IP right at the beginning. I've been impressed by how dedicated we are to a pitch, how much research those teams are putting into it. Then to give you some numbers, out of the 5 game jams we made in 2024, we had about 5,000 creators submitting or entering. And out of each one, there's about 30 winners across all prizes. So there's a lot of curation that happens to the top, but not to an extent where we limit creativity. In some cases, the brand and the IP and the artist, they want to be extremely involved, and they're going to look at every single submission. In other, they trust us to pinpoint the best and have a decision. But so we obviously balance where we're going to be very careful what we expose with a brand like Care Bear. But we think first the community is not toxic, is actually very proactive and wants us to succeed and wants to embrace. They're very professional and while remaining creative. So we have been able to thread a line that is making the IP happy and the community satisfied with what they can do. Mm-hmm.
Sebastian, do you want to sort of broaden it out a little bit more now? I wonder, I mean, I don't know if sort of formally what you can say. The Sandbox has been, you know, live in very in a sort of a, some forms for, I know, getting on for at least over a year now, probably 2 years. But I guess it's still not sort of properly live yet in the sense that, as far as I understand it, that sort of stuff is permanently, persistently live. You're still sort of cycling through experiences, is that right? So I just kind of wonder if you can talk a little bit about how you see that sort of having more permanence in there, because obviously that's the point at which you start to get the sort of the flywheel of people coming into stuff and it's always there and bringing their friends in and that.
Yes. Yeah. Like the way we see it, if you look like right now, Sandbox, we are still in an alpha stage, and our goal is to move into beta probably at some point this year. And around that, what does it mean to be in beta? It means probably a lot of new product feature, new updates, and so on. So that's what we are quite focused on at the moment. I'm looking at, what does it mean to be in alpha? It means like, well, the product is still, in my opinion, not fully stable, not fully feature complete, it can be optimized in so many ways, but we've been able to test it to quite some extent already with large audiences over the past 2 years. We've run 3 alpha season, we've run probably something like 50 events already with major brands and IPs, and now we have the 1,000 experiences live to play, and people can spend more time to explore, etc. Still, it's not so unusual within a video game or platform life to be in alpha or beta stage for a few years. I still think Sandbox is quite young, like maybe 3-4 years overall total development time and being live with our game maker, VoxEdit, etc. So I'm confident like we can be in beta this year, maybe 1.0 next year, and also available on mobile. And once we're really 1.0 live, start to scale all those audiences to bring many more users, to do massive user acquisition and so on. So it's all normal, I would say. Nothing particular to worry or be concerned about. And I really look forward to like every step of that long journey. You've seen Pixel, our previous game studio. You had the luck to be part of it, following us at Pocket Gamer London for close to 8 years. So you see that like games that evolve over time, and I'm sure like it will be the same for Sandbox over the years.
You're basically saying I'm not patient enough. That's what I'm reading.
No. I think it's we're here building Sandbox for 5-10 more years. Hopefully, we want to make sure we have the runway, the capacity, and the product is there and meets the demand and the feature request for creators. And I think that's something it's something like many people tend to forget in Web3 gaming. At the end, it's still games. It takes time to build great game, as you know. And for the metaverse to succeed, if the technology, the underlying tech and the underlying product are not good enough and don't keep evolving over time, I don't think it will be sufficient to reach success. So the success of Metaverse will be around product, technology, content, and ecosystem. Four key factors that we need to work over time on.
And do you think, I mean, obviously you wouldn't, the product as the vision of the product is it's on the blockchain, so it's a bit ridiculous to say if you weren't on the blockchain, would you have gone faster? But I mean, how much complexity has the blockchain added to what you're trying to do? Because obviously, you know, originally as sort of, I think, you know, as formulated, you were on Ethereum and your NFTs were on Ethereum, and then you moved to Polygon, and there's all this sort of infrastructure sort of change happening sort of all the time in the blockchain space, which is, I guess, adds complexity. But is that fundamental complexity, or is it just building? If someone decided now to build a Roblox competitor not on the blockchain, it's going to take them like 8 years, or, you know, it's going to, you're just following the general time frame it takes to build these massive platforms, and the blockchain is sort of irrelevant from that point of view.
I think so. I do think like adding the blockchain, it's something that's it's an extra product by itself. So they have the blockchain or the technology, the smart contract, like thinking the design and the architecture for all the tokens from Sand, from Land, from avatars, the migration from Ethereum to Polygon. So yes, that might have added some delay. We were not expecting L1 to have like those scalability issues and gas fee issues, onboarding, with yes, like all of that is something we had to, and we still continue to work to optimize. We contributed with the ERC-1155 standards. We contributed with some standards around royalties as well. Those are ongoing topics that when you're on centralized platform, sometimes the App Store, Google Play Store, you don't have to think about. Like Apple, Google Play, they took care of you for like Face ID, account IDs, ways to make payment faster, simpler, all the UX and so on. I guess it's still it's an exciting part of decentralization as well to have the chance to be involved in like the core aspect of the design and topic of those solution, and to experiment around things like interoperability, account abstraction, cross chain bridging, and things like that, and even staking, etc. Like a lot of things that you can do using blockchain. DeFi gaming, GameFi, staking, new mechanism with DAOs. It's a very powerful tool that are still very underused at the moment. I think we can do much more in terms of exploring with those gameplays. But that can lead to really different game designs and innovation in business model. So we'd love to play with it. We have already a lot of exciting ideas around like creators tokens, around like launchpads, around the DAO of Sandbox that's coming as well. And involving progressively a lot more power to the community to do their own things as well, leveraging those digital assets. The fact that the simplest example has been guilds, how guilds have been able to grow and generate a new economy model, distribution, user acquisition on top of game, because game decentralized assets, their characters, and sometimes even their gameplay rules, is just like a fantastic example of what can be done. And we haven't yet found the massive leader or the successful model to iterate on it yet.
Yep. Okay, come back to you, Nicola. I mean, I guess when you were sort of onboarding, there was still sort of the buzz about the metaverse, which is definitely something that, you know, the Sandbox sort of came to prominence with in sort of the sort of 2020 timeframe, which has sort of gone away now. Do you think that? I mean, I don't know whether you guys still consider the Sandbox as a metaverse, whatever a metaverse is these days. But, you know, do you think that is still a sort of powerful sort of brand? Sort of feature that is going to sort of come back into play, or do you think that's, I mean, people don't use the term metaverse anymore, so maybe it's a term that's sort of become sort of too degraded. But I mean, how do you think about that sort of stuff, and how when you're talking to people in the industry, is that metaverse something they talk about anymore?
Yes, we think of ourselves as a metaverse company, and we do believe strongly that the metaverse is still there. And in fact, when we talk to people from some of the most prominent gaming companies, they still think of themselves as metaverse. I'm not going to speak for them, but you can think the biggest UGC game, they talk of themselves as metaverse. I think it's good in a way that the buzz is a little bit faded because it gives us the chance to build and focus on what it really is. And what it really is still being shaped, right? We envision a future with many metaverse. We envision a future where metaverse talk and interact with one another. And people can sort of pick, like today you choose to live in New York, Los Angeles, or Tokyo. Something that personally worked out for me, yes, the metaverse buzz kind of faded a little bit. The gaming industry became all about UGC. As I got into a UGC-driven company, so I think what we lost on one side, we acquired in a way that is way more immediately relatable to the B2C and to the B2B right off the bat. So I think it worked out for us as far as how we can position ourselves to the public.
And when you talk to sort of general people in the sort of traditional gaming space, as I call it now, the Web2 space, are they? You know, there seems to have been sort of fluctuations in whether in their attitude to sort of blockchain, and you know, we've seen situations where people have seemed really excited, then people have seen won't use the word. Again, is that what trends are you seeing around that? Is it just you think we've got to the state yet where people see it just as a technology that at some point is going to be a sort of key part of gaming, or is it, are we still a ways off that?
Well, 9 months ago when I joined. The attitude was way worse than it is today.
Yes.
People change a little bit where the industry is going. What the standard Web2 gaming industry person will tell you is, yes, I see a reason for the technology to exist, but not yet, right? And I think, I was up there making premium game for Ubi in 2012 when Clash of Clans was about to get launched or launched. So the disruptions take a little bit to be embraced. Seb spends a lot of time in Asia, and I'm trying to spend more and more time in Asia with him, and maybe he can speak about, he was just in China and Hong Kong. Like right there, the perception is probably 2-3 years ahead of us. And a Web3 interoperability ownership seem to be way more normal for players. So I think it's just a matter of, I think it just takes some time for industry to get somewhere. I think it's normally to be a little bit cautious. I think especially with a market that goes up and down, you can't blame people, but eventually it's inevitable.
Zeb, do you wanna carry on that? Do you find a noticeable change in attitude in Asia?
Of course, I think I've been saying for quite some time now, the growth of Web3 and Asia is becoming really the main Web3 hub, Hong Kong specifically. I'm sure you talk with Animo Cabrand, Yatsu on that topic. For Sandbox, it grew to represent about 35-40% of our audience, project landowners and holders as well, partners too, and brands. And I can feel that trend keeps going further. Like the two of us, Nicolas was at NFT NYC in New York, the same time I was in Hong Kong for Web3 Festival, Web3 Game Summit.
A different experience, I'd say.
Exactly. Like walking into the Web3 Festival, I felt like I was at an anime convention or a massive game conference with thousands of people walking through different booths, collecting merch, swag, signing up, earning token, doing airdrops. Of course, I didn't talk about all the investment side, etc. So there is audience, there is players, there are people engaging with the project, etc. And I'm not talking about the overall quality of each project. I'm taking there is audience, there is projects. It's exciting. In New York, maybe it was not that exciting. It was still something, but a bit different.
It was very industry focused, right? Like it was a lot of side events, people in the industry excited. They see like a bright future, but it wasn't that mainstream as what Seb experienced.
So that's a very simple picture you depict, like moment when is Web3 adoption, when is mass adoption. Well, I don't want to get people going to booth, regular agencies that start like just to do things, collecting token, enjoying, engaging, etc. I kind of feel it's the right step forward. That's what you would expect from Web3 gaming is gaining the mainstream. What we're seeing as well is really the understanding of deep crypto staking token related. Like first of all, like the percentage of population in Asia that is Gen Z is way above than US or Europe, just because of demographic and like geopolitics of those countries. The fact that so many of them have like already a wallet, a crypto account on an exchange. I think like in Korea, we're talking a country of like 10 million plus users with a wallet. Vietnam, Thailand, Indonesia are those countries. They are in the top five of all of the countries using Binance, to give you an example. That's the level of penetration that blockchain and crypto has in Asia. And it's quite logical that moving from just like payment and transfer of money, it becomes like Yat is saying, like NFTs is a store of value. Cultural project emerge. NFTs being used for art, for gaming, and other exciting thing around, and it's much more seamless to go across all those different industries.
Cool. Yeah, it makes sense. Sort of a, I guess, a sort of a rounding up question, and sort of looking towards the future question. You sort of mentioned that, Sebastian, that you sort of, when you get to the beta and sort of version 1.0 and go mobile, and I wonder, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but do you think sort of really having the sandbox going mobile is sort of the point at which you've sort of that's the end of the beginning, and that's the point at which you can start to sort of drive mass adoption. And obviously, you kind of, Nicola, you worked in the mobile industry as well. I just kind of wonder sometimes in the blockchain gaming side is because there's issues with going through app stores at the moment. So you sort of stuff you can't do that you want to do. So maybe people just say, "I'll stick to sort of PC or something." But and obviously, you're on PC, you can probably build a pretty solid kind of audience out there. There's hundreds of millions of PCs that you can address. But is it in your own mind, do you see going ahead, mobile is really the point at which we hit sort of that start to get that sort of rocket ship sort of growth, or is that too simplistic a viewpoint?
It's a bit simplistic. I mean, like we've all seen Palworld. Like the PC gaming market by itself is big enough. It's deployed enough in sufficient number of countries, in Asia, in Europe, in US as well, for it to matter alone. That we see like Epic Store, Steam Store, like they are large enough marketplaces and store of games. Palworld, in a matter of weeks, reached out like 7 or 8 million users, and it was a premium game at like $50. So there is way for PC gaming only to keep growing. However, I do think like mobile represents mostly two exciting things. One is like more casual audiences, and two is the ability to really play and enter a metaverse experience, join your friends, and interact just from anywhere on the go. So I don't think it will kick off mass adoption necessarily. Like there might be unrelated events. It could be indeed effectively the moment where it really accelerate the growth. That's we've been doing mobile for 10 years before, so we are more used to that ecosystem than PC gaming. But it's not necessarily the only way forward and the only correlation between the two events you described.
Lovely. Good. Well, thank you to Sebastian and Nicola for your time and for your expertise.
Thank you for
Of
having
course,
me.
thank you, Jordan, John, and it's great to have you as always. And thanks for following Sandbox over time. We'd love to have you and to make an avatar of you in Sandbox.
Oh,
I think that
gracious.
could be fun.
Fun for
Let's
who?
do
I don't
that.
know. No, we could definitely. Well, yes, we'll have to sort that out. I'll say on my side as well. So my children have been making loads of stuff in Game Maker, so that's why I'm sort of quite focused on it. But we haven't quite got to the
Amazing.
stage yet of publishing it, so that's why I'm sort of quite interested in that sort of publishing sort of model and how many people are doing it, and because I kind of feel like I should be one of those 1,000 people who, well, not me, I should put my son's constructions into the sandbox. So maybe we'll do a deal. I'll publish something, and you can put my avatar in there, and then we'll both have come at the
That's amazing.
Cool. Amazing.
John, thanks so much for having us.
No, thanks for the conversation. Obviously, we'll have you back on when the when things are happening that we need to talk about again, so we can keep the conversation going. So thanks to The Sandbox, and thanks to you for watching, listening to the podcast, however you are consuming it. Every week we are putting out new episodes. So there's loads of stuff going on in blockchain, trying to cover it all. And I hope you are enjoying it as much as I am. So please subscribe, don't miss out, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye, everyone.